Welcome to the Movement Church Podcast. Our vision is to be a movement of people finding their way back to God. For more information about Movement Church, including attending a worship experience, getting connected, or to give online, please visit movementcolumbus.com.
That song gets me really excited about life. It was a tough week, as you all know. The Cavs lost. I shouldn't bring that up, but I just did. Phil's giving me a thumbs up. Just keep walking out, Phil. You're a terrible person and a bad Ohioan. I think he's just been doing that to bother me all week. He was posting things about how LeBron is not a king, and it really got me upset. So maybe after church we can all beat him up together or something. But no, the Cavs lost. It rained all week. It was a tough week. So I'm glad that we can cheer people up with some Father's Day bacon and talk about summer vacation. We're doing this series. I think we all, when we were in school, maybe you still are in school, used to be excited for summer, used to want to get to summer, not have to go to school and just get to the point where you could go to the pool and hang out. And sometimes we get into summer and summer happens and we get to the end of it and we think, what was the point of that? What just happened? I feel like I went to the pool twice and now summer's over again. And similarly, sometimes when God has us in the middle of something, we don't know why he's taking us through that. We don't know what he's doing. We don't know where he's taking us. And the next thing we know, it's over. And we wonder what the value was or what he was trying to teach us, what he was trying to do. And so we're taking this summer, this series, Summer Vacation, to look at the book of Exodus, to look at what God did in and through the nation of Israel as he brought them out of Egypt, how he built into them, how he was saying, I'm calling you to something greater, and how he really grew them through that time. We think that has a lot of parallels for us as a church and what God has coming up. And so a few weeks ago, we kicked this series off. And we talked about the fact that the nation of Israel ended up in Egypt. And God raised up this man, Moses. You've probably heard of him. He's a big deal. They make some animated movies about him, the Prince of Egypt and other ones. But Moses was raised up, and he was kind of the perfect person. He was an Israelite, but he was also raised in the Egyptian palace with Pharaoh. And so he was kind of the perfect man that could play middle ground to bring Israel out of Egypt and to bring them out of slavery. And our big idea was this: just because you mess up and run away from God, like Moses did, like we saw him do, it doesn't mean that God is done with you. After that, we saw God give Moses this idea and say, I want you to bring my people out of slavery. I want you to bring this nation that I love, that I've chosen, that I've selected, my people. I want you to bring them out of Egypt. And Moses made excuse after excuse after excuse, and he wasn't really on board with what God was doing and where God was taking him. And so we said that sometimes we don't see what God is doing, but our big idea last week was, when God calls you to do something, the only answer is yes. The answer is not maybe, or the answer is not, well, I can't do that right now. The answer is yes, God, I see what you're doing. I see what you want to do through me, and I want to be a part of that. And so this week, we want to get to kind of the stereotypical exciting part of Exodus, the part in chapters 5 through 12 where God actually brings Israel out of Egypt. And so if you want to turn, there's probably a Bible in your seat, under your seat, around you somewhere. We'd love for you to turn there with us. We're going to be on page 47 in Exodus chapter 5. Page 47, Exodus chapter 5. And this is just going to be, like I said, this is going to be the story of after Moses realized that, you know what, God has called me to bring these people out of Egypt. You know what, I do need to be a part of this. Let me go and do that. This is the story of how that happened and how God orchestrated those events. We're going to be taking kind of a survey, a quick approach through a lot of info, a lot of things here. But I think it's got some great impact and really tells us a lot. So we'll be in Exodus chapter 5. I'm going to read in verse 1. You can follow along. Today we'll be turning some pages and going through some chapters. But I hope that this challenges you like it did me as I prepared. Exodus chapter 5, verse 1, page 47 says this. This is Moses and Aaron speaking to Pharaoh. After the presentation to Israel's leaders, Moses and Aaron went and spoke to Pharaoh. He's kind of the president, the king, the most powerful man in Egypt. They told him, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go, so they may hold a festival in my honor in the wilderness. Is that so? Retorted Pharaoh. And who is the Lord? Why should I listen to him and let Israel go? I don't know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. But Aaron and Moses persisted. The God of the Hebrews has met with us, they declared. So let us take a 3-day journey into the wilderness so we can offer sacrifices to the Lord our God. If we don't, he will kill us with a plague or with the sword. Pharaoh replied, Moses and Aaron, why are you distracting the people from their tasks? Get back to work. Look, there are many of your people in the land, and you are stopping them from their work. That same day, Pharaoh sent this order to the Egyptian slave drivers and the Israelite foremen. Do not supply any more straw for making bricks. Make the people get it themselves. But still require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They are lazy. That's why they are crying out, let us go and offer sacrifices to our God. Load them down with more work. Make them sweat. That will teach them to listen to lies. Things are not great for the nation of Israel. They're already in slavery. They're already being treated terrible by the Egyptian leadership, by Pharaoh, and by his people. Moses knows that God has asked him to go and call them out of Egypt, and so he does just that. And Pharaoh says, of course, I see your point. That's a wonderful idea. I agree with your God. Go ahead and leave. No, that's not what he says. He says, nope, I'm not feeling that. In fact, these people have been working for me. They've been doing a really good job, and I kind of like the control and the power. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to make them work even harder. They had been building bricks. They'd been building buildings and all kinds of stuff, and straw had been supplied for those bricks. And so now it was said, well, you got to go out and find your own straw, which is going to take time, and you have to go out and prepare that and bring it back and make the bricks. And so that's going to take longer. That's going to slow down production. Nope. We're going to all work harder. It's kind of like if your boss says, hey, remember when you thought you were leaving at 5? Well, we're going to work a second 8-hour shift, and I actually need you to be in charge because I'm going on vacation, right? Sometimes things just happen, and people change the rules, and we're like, that's not fair. That's not what's going to happen. But that's what happens to Israel. They have to find their own straw. They have to make the same amount of bricks, if not more bricks, because it's harder work. And so God has called Moses to bring them out of Egypt. He kind of casts that vision, talks to Pharaoh, and that doesn't take place. Verse 15. So the Israelite foreman went to Pharaoh and pleaded with him, please don't treat your servants like this, they begged. We were given no straw, but the slave drivers still demand make bricks. We're being beaten, but it isn't our fault. Your own people are to blame. But Pharaoh shouted, you're just lazy, lazy. That's why you're saying, let us go and offer sacrifices to the Lord. Now get back to work. No straw will be given to you, but you must still produce the full quota of bricks. The Israelite foreman could see that they were in serious trouble when they were told, you must not reduce the number of bricks you make each day. As they left Pharaoh's court, they confronted Moses and Aaron, who were waiting outside for them. The foreman said to them, may the Lord judge and punish you for making us stink before Pharaoh and his officials. You have put a sword into their hands, an excuse to kill us. Then Moses went back to the Lord and protested, why have you brought us all this trouble on your own people? Lord, why did you send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh as your spokesman, he has been even more brutal to your people, and you have done nothing to rescue them. This is a really inspirational story, isn't it? It really, really feels good on Father's Day. God puts this vision before Moses. He goes in there and says, Pharaoh, let God's people go. And Pharaoh says, no, in fact, I'm going to work them twice as hard. And then the people say, it's okay, we understand what God's doing. No, they say, Moses, why are you here? You're complicating our life and making this difficult. We don't even want you here. Now we're probably going to get killed. And then Moses says, it's okay, I understand what God's doing, right? No, he also says, I'm going to get mad at God. I'm going to doubt what he's calling me to, and I'm not too excited about this stuff. And so Pharaoh isn't on board with this. The Israelites aren't on board with this. Moses, who's supposed to be the leader of this, doesn't feel like he's on board with this anymore. And so we go on to chapter 6 as the story continues. Then the Lord told Moses, now you will see what I do to Pharaoh. When he feels the force of my strong hand, he will let the people go. In fact, he will force them to leave his land. And God said to Moses, I am Yahweh the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as El Shaddai, God Almighty. But I did not reveal my name, Yahweh, to them. And I reaffirmed my covenant with them. Under its terms, I promised to give them the land of Canaan, where they were living as foreigners. You can be sure that I have heard the groans of the people of Israel who are now slaves to the Egyptians, and I am well aware of my covenant with them. Therefore, say to the people of Israel, I am the Lord. I will free you from oppression and will rescue you from your slavery in Egypt. I will redeem you with a powerful arm and great acts of judgment. I will claim you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord God who has freed you from oppression in Egypt. I will bring you into the land I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Those are their ancestors. I will give it to you as your very own possession. I am the Lord. So Moses told the people of Israel what the Lord had said, but they refused to listen anymore. They had become too discouraged by the brutality of their slavery. Then the Lord said to Moses, go back to Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and tell him to let the people of Israel leave his country. But Lord, Moses objected, my own people won't listen to me anymore. How can I expect Pharaoh to listen? I'm such a clumsy speaker. But the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, his brother, and gave them orders for the Israelites and for Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. The Lord commanded Moses and Aaron to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt. So God is saying, I haven't given up on you, my people. I haven't given up on this covenant. I haven't given up on my promise, and I haven't forgotten my plan that you're about to see happen. God has to remind them that he's in control, that he is who he says he is, that he's been faithful to them for generations, and that he's going to do what he says he's going to do. And so he does some different things, kind of shows his power, shows his presence there. God has Moses' brother Aaron, has him put down his staff, a walking staff, and turn into a snake. We mentioned some things like that in weeks past. That's not something that happens every day, right? That you just put a walking stick down and it turns into a snake. That's some way that God was showing up. And so God begins to build up and show his power in these ways. But that's not the only thing he does. Later on in chapter 7 after that, verse 19 says this, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Tell Aaron, take your staff and raise your hand over the waters of Egypt, all its rivers, canals, ponds, and all the reservoirs. Turn all the water to blood. Everywhere in Egypt, the water will turn to blood, even the water stored in wooden bowls and stone pots.' So Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord commanded them. As Pharaoh and all his officials watched, Aaron raised his staff and struck the water of the Nile. Suddenly, the whole river turned to blood. The fish in the river died, and the water became so foul that the Egyptians couldn't drink it. There was blood everywhere throughout the land of Egypt. But again, the magicians of Egypt used their magic, and they too turned water into blood. So Pharaoh's heart remained hard. He refused to listen to Moses and Aaron, just as the Lord had predicted. Pharaoh returned to his palace and put the whole thing out of his mind. Then all the Egyptians dug along the riverbank to find drinking water, for they couldn't find the drinking water from the Nile." So Moses goes to the Pharaoh. He says, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh says, "I thought about it. No." And then God begins to show up and enact his plan, and he's doing small things, and he's doing big things. He's changing all of the water into blood to get Pharaoh's attention and say, "These are my people. This is my plan. I'm using Moses in this time. I'm not kidding about this." And Pharaoh's heart is still hardened. He's still closed off to what God is doing. He's still stuck on himself and stuck on his greatness and stuck on the way things have been. Exodus chapter 8, verse 5. "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Tell Aaron, raise the staff in your hand over all the rivers, canals, and ponds of Egypt, and bring up frogs over all the land.' So Aaron raised his hand over the waters of Egypt, and frogs came up and covered the whole land." God is doing this series of events, these plagues, these things to get Pharaoh's attention, to show his power, and to show what he's doing. And these are not normal things, right? We said that if you were to lay down your walking stick and it were to turn into a snake, that would be pretty crazy, right? But I think we're kind of like, well, we've all been walking on a path and thought that a stick was a snake, so maybe that kind of makes sense to us. Have you ever seen someone turn all of the water in an entire country into blood? I already know the answer. That was rhetorical, right? We knew that. You haven't seen that because that's crazy. God is showing his power. And have you ever seen someone just kind of wave their stick and say, "I want frogs to come out of everywhere and just cover the entire land"? This doesn't say like, "And then two frogs got into Pharaoh's bedroom and he was mildly annoyed by that." This passage says there were frogs everywhere covering the entire land. So this is like an epidemic, right? This is a big deal. You ever go to the mall and you see like two or three people wearing a Michigan jersey and you're just like filled with rage and you feel like, man, they're everywhere right now, right? Especially during the season, it just really bothers you. This is probably even a lot worse than that, right? There are frogs everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. That's annoying. And so every time you're trying to do anything, I can't imagine what it's like to try and be walking and step on a frog and hear like this, you know, and you kind of kill the frog and it's under your foot and you're trying to go to the bathroom and there's just a frog hopping by and you're eating and there's frogs in your food and you're trying to lay in your bed and there's like a frog on your head just talking to you. There's frogs everywhere. And so God is using his power. God is doing incredible, crazy things to get the attention of Pharaoh and to show the Israelites that he's enacting this plan. So there's another plague, another thing that God does. Verse 16 says, "So the Lord said to Moses, 'Tell Aaron, raise your staff and strike the ground. The dust will turn into swarms of gnats throughout the lands of Egypt.'" And so as they continue to say, Pharaoh, let God's people go. Let the Israelites go. He thinks about it. He considers it. He says he might do it. He says he might worship their God. Oh, you can have that festival, but you need to have it here. And then his heart is hardened. He continues to say no, and he's not on board with what God is doing. And so God continues to use Moses and Aaron to bring about these plagues and bring about these different things. And so if you thought frogs were annoying, that's pretty annoying, right? And yet at the same time, most of us have probably caught a frog at some point in our life and thought it was cute. Maybe you have an inner Dennis the Menace like me. You just think sometimes you need to pick up a frog when you see one and catch it. And so you're thinking like, well, frogs would be bad. The only thing that would be more annoying than that, I can't even imagine having gnats just everywhere, covering everything. I almost want to throw up thinking about it, but I won't do that up here because then everyone else will get sick. But can you imagine your entire country, all of the land, the air, just gnats everywhere? I can't imagine anything more disgusting. And so God is getting their attention. And yet Pharaoh continues to have a hard heart. God says, I will make a clear distinction between my people and your people. The people that he wants to be free, the people that he wants to use, the people that he is calling. God's getting their attention. And yet we see more plagues. This is Exodus chapter 9. And the Lord did just as he had said. The next morning, all of the livestock of the Egyptians died, but the Israelites didn't use a single animal. Back then, livestock was your everything. Livestock was your money, was your source of income, was your source of status, was your source of food. So the Israelites had animals, and the Egyptians had many more animals. And God came in, and he took away their livestock. Imagine if you woke up tomorrow and you didn't have a phone or a car. That's probably the best way that I can teach that to us modern day Americans. You would wake up and think, oh, my car doesn't start. I better call a friend and get a ride. Oh, I don't have a phone. And then we'd start to panic, right? I'm going to have to walk to work and I can't text my friend and I won't be able to watch the ESPN app on my lunch break. And we'd start freaking out. That's what this meant to them when they didn't have livestock. Everything was changed. Everything was gone. And so they've had frogs. They've had gnats. They've had all of these amazing things that God is doing. Verse 10 says this, through a process as Pharaoh watched Moses threw soot in the air and boils broke out on people and animals alike. And so we said that frogs were annoying. We said that gnats are annoying. It would be pretty terrible if you lost your livestock. But imagine having boils. Maybe some of you in here have had a boil. I don't know. But imagine if everyone, all of the animals, all of the people just had boils breaking out everywhere. You probably would wish that you could have the gnats back, right? If there were just boils on your skin and pieces of flesh missing and infected pieces, and I don't want to talk about that too much because some of you just had bacon and we know that's not a good idea, but imagine that this is happening. This is breaking out. There are boils on people and on the animals, and so the animals that are left are miserable and everyone's miserable. No one likes their life. God is getting their attention. And yet, Pharaoh's heart is still hardened. He's not on board with what God is doing. He's not on board with Israel being free. He's not on board with letting them go, letting them worship their God. Verse 23 says this, so Moses lifted his staff toward the sky, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and lightning flashed toward the earth. The Lord sent a tremendous hailstorm against all the land of Egypt. Never in all the history of Egypt had there been a storm like that, with such devastating hail and continuous lightning. It left all of Egypt in ruins. The hail struck down everything in the open field, people, animals, and plants alike. Even the trees were destroyed. The only place without hail was the region of Goshen, where the people of Israel lived. So God had a plan. Moses wasn't on board with that plan. And God began to use these miracles, these plagues, to get his attention. So there was times that livestock died, and there were times that frogs were around, and all of the water was turned into blood, and those things are terrible and awful. And there were boils. Boils are not fun. But imagine what it's like to have a hailstorm and lightning where everything is struck down. All of the plants, all of the animals, where people are dying. Those of you who remember what it's like to be young, those of you who have young children in your house, know that sometimes during thunderstorms, they freak out, right? And they come to your room and they say, can I sleep with you? Or they're just worried because they see lightning out of their window. Imagine what it would be like if things were so bad that that wasn't just them being paranoid. Sometimes my kids come in and I just want to say, we have a roof, guys. Just go back to your room and go to sleep, right? That's what I want to say because I'm not a very good dad and I'm not sympathetic, right? But sometimes we think like, well, there's nothing to be afraid of. It's not like you're standing outside holding an umbrella and you're going to get struck by lightning or something. And yet this fear that they would have had would be very legitimate. I mean, they're seeing people struck down and killed. They're seeing their crops lost. These are things that they're able to comprehend and fathom what's going on, and it's legitimate fear. This storm is so serious, and they've angered God. They've gone against God. Their leader has not agreed to let Israel go, and so they're seeing people and plants and animals killed. They're seeing their land decimated. They're seeing things disappear, and so their fear was legitimate. So there's a moment, there's an interaction where it looks like Pharaoh's going to say, okay, I get it. This has been the worst couple days and weeks of my life. There's been all these ways I've seen God's power, and his plan is very obvious, and I've lost people close to me, and my people are suffering, and we're losing crops, we're losing livestock. All right. And yet as that storm stops, Pharaoh's heart is hardened again. And he still isn't in agreement with what God is doing, and he still is not in agreement that Israel should be let go. And he's still not ready to bow his knee to God and say, I'll let your people go. Exodus chapter 10. This probably seems like a broken record at this point. Some of you know this story. Most of us know the story. There's just plague after plague after plague. And Pharaoh pretends he's going to relent and then doesn't. And so God sends locusts. Verse 12 says this, then the Lord said to Moses, raise your hand over the land of Egypt to bring on the locusts. Let them cover the land and devour every plant that survived the hailstorm. That's just adding insult to injury, right? So we've already had gnats, we've already had frogs, we've already had water turning into blood. There might be some plants that were knocked over by the hailstorm and they're still living there. And then these locusts come in and just start eating everything. This is like a really messed up movie, right? Where just everything that can go wrong does go wrong. And you would think that at some point Pharaoh's like, all right, God, you've got my attention. This is really creeping me out, and I couldn't have designed this to be worse for me and my people. Everything has been taken from us. You've got my attention. But he doesn't relent. Then the Lord said to Moses, lift your hand toward heaven, and the land of Egypt will be covered with a darkness so thick that you can feel it. So Moses lifted his hand to the sky, and a deep darkness covered the entire land of Egypt for 3 days. During all that time, the people could not see each other, and no one moved. But there was light as usual where the people of Israel lived. These plagues are getting progressively worse, and they're getting Pharaoh's attention. We like to think that we know darkness, but most of us in our bedroom, unless you're one of those people that likes blackout curtains, you can probably look up and like see light in some way. You have an alarm that gives off light. You can see shadows. You can see movement. Maybe you sleep with a nightlight and you just don't want to talk about it today. You don't want to admit it. But we don't really know darkness. This is darkness so dark, no one moved. It says no one moved. This was there for 3 days. So imagine things being so dark that you just don't go anywhere. Wherever you're sitting right now, it's so dark that you're terrified to move. You're afraid to move. This isn't just like, oh, the power went out. Oh, time to light a new candle. Oh, we'll wait till the sun comes up again. Oh, we're still in control. We can fix this in some way. This is a darkness that very obviously is from God and got their attention. And so there is no light anywhere at all. Verse 24, finally Pharaoh called for Moses. Go and worship the Lord, he said, but leave your flocks and your herds here. You may even take your little ones with you. No, Moses said, you must provide us with animals for sacrifices and burnt offering to the Lord our God. Verse 27 goes on to say, but the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart once more, and he would not let them go. Get out of here. Pharaoh shouted at Moses, I'm warning you, never come back to see me again. And so Pharaoh does not understand what God is doing. Pharaoh is not on board with what God is doing. Even as things have gotten difficult, even as the Lord has called these plagues and put different things in place, he doesn't have his attention. Chapter 11 says this, verse 4. Moses had announced to Pharaoh, this is what the Lord says, at midnight tonight I will pass through the heart of Egypt. All the firstborn sons will die in every family in Egypt. from the oldest son of Pharaoh who sits on his throne to the oldest son of his lowliest servant girl who grinds the flour. Even the firstborn of all the livestock will die. Then a loud wail will raise up throughout the land of Egypt, a wail like no one has heard before or will ever hear again. But among the Israelites, it will be so peaceful that not even a dog will bark. Then you will know that the Lord makes a distinction between the Egyptians and the Israelites. So God begins to put this plan in place. Things are getting very serious. Chapter 12 says this in verse 6. Take special care of this chosen animal until the evening of the 14th day of the first month. Then the whole assembly of the community of Israel must slaughter their lamb or young goat at twilight. They are to take some of the blood and smear it on the sides and tops of the door frames of the houses where they eat the animal. And so God begins to enact this plan that he had said, where the firstborn in every family and of the livestock would die, and that the angel of death would sweep over the country of Egypt. And God was going to use this plan and this turn of events to get their attention and to get Pharaoh's attention and to get them to see how much he loved Israel, how serious he was about this, and what he was doing. Verse 28 says this, "So the people of Israel did just as the Lord had commanded through Moses and Aaron. And that night at midnight, the Lord struck down all of the firstborn sons in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn son of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn son of the prisoner in the dungeon. Even the firstborn of their livestock were killed. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the people of Egypt woke up during the night, and loud wailing was heard throughout the land of Egypt. There was not a single house where someone had not died. Pharaoh sent for Moses and Aaron during the night. 'Get out,' he ordered. 'Leave my people and take the rest of the Israelites with you. Go and worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks, your herds as you have said, and be gone. Go, but bless me as you leave.' All the Egyptians urged the people of Israel to get out of the land as quickly as possible, for they thought, 'We will all die.' The Israelites took their bread dough before yeast was added. They wrapped their kneading boards and their cloaks and carried them on their shoulders. And the people of Israel did as Moses had instructed. They asked the Egyptians for clothing and articles of silver and gold. The Lord caused the Egyptians to look favorably on the Israelites, and they gave the Israelites whatever they asked for. So they stripped the Egyptians of their wealth. That night, the people of Israel left Ramses and started for Succoth. There were about 600,000 men, plus all the women and children. A rabble of non-Israelites went with them, along with great flocks and herds of livestock. For bread, they baked flat cakes with the dough without yeast they had brought from Egypt. It was made without yeast because the people were driven out of Egypt in such a hurry that they had no time to prepare the bread or other food. The people of Israel had lived in Egypt for 430 years. In fact, it was on the last day of the 430th year that all of the Lord's forces left the land. On this night, the Lord kept his promise to bring his people out of the land of Egypt. So this night belongs to him, and it must be commemorated every year by all of the Israelites from generation to generation." And so what we saw was God saying, "I'm serious about my covenant. I'm serious about my love. I'm serious about my pursuit of my people and my plan for them and what I'm doing." And Pharaoh wasn't on board with that, and God got his attention and got his attention and showed his power in many ways until Pharaoh understood. And so God sent this angel of death, and by putting the blood of a lamb on the door, the angel of death would essentially pass over those houses for the Israelites. And they were able to escape this penalty. They were able to escape what was happening. And so that's where the term Passover comes from. And this is the beginning and celebration of that, where God wants to commemorate what has happened. And so what can we see from this story? What can we see from what God is doing? What can we see from this story that we often think is just about a guy taking some people out and raising his staff and the water parts, and then they walk through and everything's great? We can see that God is serious in his pursuit for us, in his plan for us, in his love for us. He made a covenant with Israel, and he kept that covenant. He said he was going to take them to the land of Canaan. He was going to give them the land of Canaan, and this is how he enacted that plan. This is how he accomplished that plan. Even when it didn't look like he remembered them, even when it didn't look like he loved them, even when it looked like he had forgotten them, even when things were getting worse, things were getting more difficult, things were getting confusing, and they didn't understand, God was still in love with them. God was still keeping his covenant. We've talked in weeks and months past that a covenant is not a contract. It doesn't mean, oh, Israel was perfect and they treated God great, and so God's going to keep his side of the bargain. Israel didn't even want any part in this. They told Moses to get out of there, and yet God knew that his covenant was a pact that he had made. And so he kept his side. He pursued them. He loved them. He took care of them. And even when they were down and out, and even when they were enslaved by the people of Egypt, even when they couldn't see what God was doing, even when their vision was kind of fogged because all they knew was the suffering they had, all they knew were the things that they had seen and the things that dominated their life and their thoughts and their day-to-day living, God was still faithful and God was still pursuing them. Egypt was a great country by the world's terms. Pharaoh was a great leader. This was an empire. This was a place where money and food and status and all those things existed. And yet God was greater. God's covenant and God's love and God's pursuit of Israel was greater than that. These plagues that happened were not just random annoying things like, let's bring some frogs. Let's bring some gnats in. These were things that were specifically tied to the gods that the Egyptians worshipped. These were things that would specifically stand out to them and say, hey, you know that thing you've been worshiping? Well, God is greater, and this is how. Those were ways that the Egyptians were distracted from God. Those were ways that they thought, my God is greater because of this. And so each one of these plagues was tied in some way. They had different gods they worshipped and these images. Some of them were tied to fertility. Some of them were tied to riches. And so the frogs were specifically tied to that. When these frogs would show up, they would take that as not just an insult to their God, but that was something that would say to them, this God, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac and Jacob, is serious. And he's greater than these things that we've been worshiping, these things that we've been distracted by. So those were the gods and distractions of their days. The gods and distraction of our days are probably status, probably our name, probably our career, probably our security, our money, maybe even our family. Sex, status, money, career, job, the things that distract us, God is greater than those things. That's what we can learn from this story. That's something we can see. And no matter how much Israel didn't believe that God was greater, no matter how much they didn't trust that he was greater, he was still moving and working. And even as there were penalties and consequences for not believing in him, not trusting him, they were able to be saved from those consequences. They were able to be saved by the blood of a lamb. And I think you can probably see the way that this ties in to what we know to be the narrative of the whole Bible. God was the deliverer of the Israelites. He brought them out of this punishment, this slavery, these things that distracted them and had them living in fear to the point they couldn't even see what God was doing. Yet the blood of one innocent lamb that was put over their door made those consequences, made death, made loneliness and slavery pass over them, and they found freedom, they found the promised land, and they found life with God out of that. And similarly, as the narrative of the Bible continues in the New Testament, we see the same thing, that we as people are enslaved to things, to gods, things that distract us from what God is trying to do in this world, what he's called us to, where he's taking us. There are consequences to us following our own way, thinking that we're smart, that we know the best way, to letting those gods distract us. Those things, just like they did for Egypt, just like they did in this story, lead to death. They lead to loneliness. They lead to abandonment. They lead to a life apart from God. And Jesus came to this world, fully God, fully man, and he lived a perfect, sinless life. So that when he died on the cross, when he was accused of wrongdoing, when he gave his life, we see him referred to as the Lamb of God. He was doing that on our behalf so that death could pass over us, so that punishment, persecution, loneliness, life without God would pass over us, so that we could have life in Jesus, so that we could have relationship with God because of the sacrifice of Jesus. God was the deliverer the Egyptians, and he enacted his plan. He accomplished his plan. And God is the deliverer of us. He accomplished his plan through the sacrifice of Jesus. That's what we can learn from this story. That's what we can take away. That's what we can know is true for us. So I think we just have a simple question today. Are we letting Jesus deliver us from the things that enslave us? Are we letting Jesus be our deliverer? Have we trusted him and trusted his plan? Are we saying, oh God, this life is difficult. I know you say you love me. I know you say you're doing things. I'm not following you anymore. This is getting too tough. I'm just going to go back to where I was and be distracted by these things and be miserable. At least that's predictable and it's a pattern. I know what I've got. Or are we saying, God, I understand that you're doing something. I understand where you're calling me. I understand what your plan is here. And I understand that you sent your son to give his life so that by believing in him, by putting my trust and my faith in him, I can have life, I can be found, and I can follow you. I can follow you to the promised land, and I can follow where you're taking me to paradise. Some of us have said that we've made a decision to trust Jesus. We've said that we've made an intellectual decision to do that. And yet our life doesn't show trust. Our life doesn't show that we're following after Jesus and walking after Jesus. If we believe that Jesus is our deliverer, if we believe that penalty, that sin, that all the things that should happen to us are erased from our life and that we're transformed in him, that should change us. That should change the way we live, the way that we interact. We shouldn't look the same. We shouldn't act the same. We shouldn't talk the same. We shouldn't be the same. We should be different people. When the Israelites went through this, when they saw the death and destruction and things that could have happened to them, and they saw the way that God saved them, they had to be grateful. They had to be thankful. They had to be changed. They had to walk different. They had to talk different. They had to look different. And we should be the same way. We've said that the book of Exodus has some parallels for us as a church. And that's one of them right there. We have to stand out. We have to look different. We have to be transformed to the point that people can look at us and see that we're trusting God, we're following God, and that Jesus is in us. If they can't see that, we're not living out change. We're not living out transformation. So are you trusting that Jesus is your deliverer? Have you let him change your life? Have you let him transform your life? And is that obvious to the people around you? Is there a small area of your life, a relationship, your career, the way that you still love status and money, some of the gods and things we said distract us? Does one of those need to be erased from your life? Do you need to deal with one of those? Do you need to say, Lord, this is a way I'm not trusting you. I give this to you. I want to trust you and follow you completely. Because we want to be a church that is running after God. As we move toward the fall, we want to be a church that's running after God and ready for him to lead us, to take us into the promised land. We want to be a church that's following after God, that's running after him, that's saying, Lord, we don't necessarily know where we're going, but we're excited about following you. We're excited about trusting you. That starts with trusting him as our deliverer. Will you pray with me? Lord, thank you for the book of Exodus. Thank you for your example. Thank you for this story. Thank you for the ways, Lord, that we can see the blueprint of your love, the blueprint of the narrative of your love all throughout the Bible. Lord, we see Jesus in this story. We see you delivering Israel, and we see you delivering us. God, I pray that we will be a church that's given to you. Lord, I pray that we'll be a church that's excited about what you're doing. Lord, I pray that we'll be a church that's ready to follow you, ready to listen to you. Lord, I'm sure the Israelites were scared as they left Egypt, not knowing where they're going, not knowing what was next, not knowing fully what it meant to trust you and follow you, but knowing that you were good, knowing that you had gone before them, knowing that you had sacrificed for them, and knowing that their life was found in you. God, let us be the same way. Let us fully trust you, fully run after you. Know that our life is found in you. And Lord, even when we don't know what's next, when we don't understand the plan, help us to trust you and trust what you're doing. God, help us to worship you now, to sing to you, to celebrate, Lord, that you deliver us from the things that distract us. You deliver us from the ways that we're lost. You deliver us from the ways that we turn our backs on you. God, help us to give you our worship, give you our everything. It's in your name I pray. Amen.